Welcome to the Phoenix Unlimited Podcast.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to a new episode of the Phoenix MMA podcast. Doing this one on a Saturday, so day before the grappling games, jiu-jitsu tournament tomorrow, and then the PKB, the Muay Thai kickboxing tournament tomorrow as well. So we got a busy Sunday tomorrow. Jiu-jitsu tournament and Muay Thai tournament. So it's gonna be a really fun Sunday. Everybody we have competing, I'm really excited for everybody. We're gonna have a lot of people do really well. I'm really excited. So the whole gym, the whole team is going to do really well. Competition team is going to do really well. This is an exciting weekend, and I'll post the updates for that as soon as I have them. Pictures and medal, podium, all that good stuff. Tomorrow I'll put on the social media accounts. This episode, when to sprint. So this episode is a follow-up from the last episode. Where I was talking about why people that should not sprint, the people that should pace themselves, why do they sprint? So going over that and tips and going into that. So now one of my favorite authors, Robert Greene, is author of 48 Laws of Power, 33 Strategies of War, Art of Seduction, 50th Law, the Laws of Human Nature, a lot of really cool books that Robert Greene is one of my favorite authors. I have several of his books. Something that he does in his chapters that I really like in the 48 Laws of Power that he does, he'll lay out a concept as one of the laws of power in his chapters, and then the last portion of that concept, that law that he lays out, he will then have the reversal, and the reversal is just the opposite perspective. Because, you know, rules are not absolute, or laws are not absolute. Some of them are, but most of them have a reversal. And so it's the counter side to it. So when he lays out a law of power, it's you know, going to be a high probability, high percentage chance that you want to follow this for success. But then the lower probability that still is, you know, objective reality still actually matters. That's what he puts with the reversal. So that's what the reason I'm doing this is a follow-up, when to sprint, because you should sprint sometimes, or you should go high intensity sometimes. So, you know, that last podcast, I don't want you thinking, you know, hey, I was just telling you to just ease up and not work hard or anything. No, it's really what I was trying to get across was, depending on what you're doing, if you're trying to develop skills, it's skill development time. If you're trying to develop power or explosiveness, strength, then that's what you focus on at that time. If you're trying to develop stabilizing muscles or grip strength or how fast you can kick or you can jump or your VO2 max, or say, let's say, your anaerobic or aerobic, just what you want to do. It's so simple. It's so basic, but for years I didn't do it. I was just kind of, I wouldn't specialize my training, and it took me much longer to learn it. And just with time I learned. So I'm trying to give this so that everybody can learn faster than I did. Again, YouTube and podcasts, they just weren't around, when I was, coming up. So trying to get this, so that all the students in the gym, can learn faster, because the faster all of y'all learn, I like to win. I like to win tournaments and fights and matches and stuff, but I get way more excited when y'all win. It's awesome. You know, just like when you get a gift versus you give somebody a gift. It's so exciting. So, and then also the self, like the selfish side, or the self like thing that helps me out, is the more people I can get on board with the same training protocol, the smoother the gym runs, the easier it is for me to run the gym and teach class, but also it makes everybody better. And then we get in this nice like harmony and this nice synchronization of the gym. And that's how you get those like dynasties. That's how you get those crazy, good teams, whether it's soccer or football, it doesn't matter, MMA, wrestling, anything. When you can get a good coaching staff with a good athlete, student group athlete, and everybody is not constantly infighting and battling with each other, and they're actually got the right mindset and they're working with each other. They're still competing with each other, but they're also working. Once you get in good harmony, it's crazy the stuff that you could do. Like I said, the last podcast had, like, Kale's one of our blue belts, but Kale almost got to have a match against one of our, Kale almost got to have a match against a black belt, and it wouldn't have surprised me if Kale would have beat that black belt. Not at all. And no disrespect to the black belt. It's just Kale is a blue belt. Is getting really good. We have lots of guys that are really getting really good. We could potentially have tomorrow one of our white belts end up going against a black belt. I'm excited because he should do very well. And no disrespect to that black belt either. No disrespect. It's just it really does matter if you use the correct training principles. And just so you know, these principles are not all mine. I've collected as much information. Basically, since I was 14 years old, I've been obsessed with this. So I'm trying to collect the most information and put it together, and then with my own experience, combining my own experience and trying to distill it into the purest form I can find. But yeah, we got a white belt that could go against black belt tomorrow, which would be sick because obviously it's hard for a white belt to beat a black belt. There's a big experience difference there. But honestly, if he can give the black belt just a solid match, which he can already give, I've already seen him give a competitive blue belt and a brown belt good matches. So again, that's and also as a white belt going against a black belt, potentially you got nothing to lose, so you're in a nice spot. but we got several blue belts in the gym that can submit. Not only can they submit black belts, but they submit black belts regularly. And it's just because good training protocols, good things for injury prevention, but the philosophy, the program, and also everybody working together the right way. And yeah, it's actually amazing with the knowledge that's out now and the experience from, I can teach somebody so much faster than I learned when I started. In a year, I can have somebody so much better. In three to four years, I'm confident that I can have somebody, 3 to 4 years, like that can, you know, if they'll put the time in, 3 to 4 years, can definitely be beating black belts. And again, it's no disrespect to the black belts. It's just, I mean, you only have what you have. There's not as much technology innovation around, you know, like my predecessors, it's not necessarily their fault. They just didn't have the information. But the part that would be someone's fault is now it's out and there's more education. So you just, you know, just being ignorant and not wanting to update your training practices and protocol and stuff, and your techniques. But, so we're doing the reversal when to sprint. There are going to be times that you do need to sprint every single week. You do need to go high intensity every single week. Again, this context is going to be for, when I say this, it's for athletes that are competing. You don't have to be pro athlete. You can be an amateur athlete. You don't have to be 20. You don't have to be 16. You don't got to be 30. You could be 40 doing this. You could be 45 doing this. You could be 50, 55. You just have to adjust the intensity or weight or whatever you're doing to where you are. Now, I would not suggest this when you are a beginner. If you haven't done a sport in 3, 5, 10 years, this is not, you shouldn't sprint at all. If you haven't trained, like I said, if you haven't trained or if you haven't done a sport in 3 to 5, 10 years, you haven't exercised, lifted weights, you're just starting at zero, or you could potentially starting at -5, -10. This could be like, you know, you've gained, you haven't done anything since high school athletics and you've gained 80 pounds, 100 pounds. I don't want you to sprint. We need you to very, very gradually build yourself up. You're going to go high intensity and sprint once we rebuild the stabilizing muscles. We lose some body fat. We rebuild all of your muscles, but we increase your heart health, all these things. I'm not telling anybody to sprint. That's not the way that you do it. You'll just get injured and you'll just discourage yourself. But if you've been at it and you have been working, let's say, you know, for the last, let's say 1 to 2 years, you've been working on your fitness or your jiu-jitsu or MMA or Muay Thai or boxing. Last 2 years, you've been physically active and you've been building your body and testing yourself. And it doesn't have to just be sport. It could be the last 2 years you've been lifting weights. Once you're in heart's in a healthy spot, your body's in a healthy spot, then you can start sprinting. But don't do that until, I would say you need a good 2 years, 1 to 2 years of a building phase. If you haven't done sports for 10 years, like no sports, just work and then watching TV, for 10 years, I would say you need to do a solid 1 to 2 years of rebuild phase. Rebuild phase, build yourself up, make yourself more flexible, make yourself stronger, and then let's condition our heart too. And then we can start going to a sprint. So with that being said, when to sprint? Whatever, a 2-stripe white belt, and you've been training for 8 months, you've been doing jiu-jitsu, and you lift weights, and you run two, or you're a blue belt, purple belt, et cetera, whatever, you're a pro fighter, you're an amateur fighter, but your body is armored up, it's pretty well conditioned. Again, compare it to an average person. You're pretty well conditioned. You're not a pro. You don't have to be a pro athlete level, but you've been working on it. So this is when to sprint. So the really short of it is you want to go high intensity when the chances of injury are low, okay? So when the chances of injury are low, you can go high intensity, okay? That's it. When the amount of ways you can get injured, the chances for injury go up, intensity needs to go down. So as the higher likelihood, just the higher chance of injury, you need to be more technical. When I say the intensity goes down, I'm just think of if you're thinking about a spectrum or like a, you know, it would be, on the left side would be technical, and then on the right side, intensity. Okay. The higher your chance, I would say for a normal training session, I would say you probably want to balance, anywhere between the middle or little bit center left or a little bit center right for a normal training session. Okay, depending on the round, you might increase your intensity 10% or decrease it 10 or increase the being technical. Being technical, when I say technical, it doesn't mean that you are soft or you're super loose or you're carefree. Technical means that you slow down the pacing and the tempo. So you maybe don't throw quite as many offensive techniques multiple times in a row or leads or feints, but you slow the tempo down. And the tempo of, your physical speed will slow down. You're not going to throw punches like Jell-O or anything, but it might be that instead of throwing 3 punches in 1.5 seconds, you just throw that one punch in 1.5 seconds. But when you throw that one punch in that 1.5 seconds, you pay attention to how your opponent's shoulders roll or rotate. Do they dip their head? Do they rock back with their head? Do they close their eyes? Do they flinch? You pay more attention to your hand that you're not punching with. You pay attention to your stance. You pay attention to your chin elevation. So you when you train technical, it's going to spend just as much energy. It's just going to be mental energy. When you go high intensity, you are going to have more of a physical fatigue. So mental fatigue on the technical side. Physical fatigue. So on the intensity side, if you hear me say that, when I say you need to be more tech, I tell people all the time, they'll ask me this and I'll say, you probably need to drop the intensity by 20%, and need to emphasize your technique 20%. Then lots of times they will then start, going softer. And it's like, I don't mean, to go soft or, softer per se, but they'll get more lazy. So they'll start giving up underhooks, or for jiu-jitsu wrestling, they'll give up underhooks. They'll give up bad position, for striking. They'll drop their hands more, or they'll let their partner hit them. It's not what it means. It's, if you hear me say it, at least by technical, I mean more mental, rigor on what you're doing, being more cerebral, paying attention to all your surroundings, yourself, your opponent more. And then the intensity side is you're increasing the tempo, you're exerting yourself physically more. So more squeeze, more explosiveness, more strength, more power output, and then also an increased tempo of offense or counters or defense. Okay. It doesn't intensity. You could be very, very like say if you're guard passing, for instance, or even punching, boxing or kickboxing, you could not increase the power, but still increase the intensity. So how you would do that for jiu-jitsu is you would do loose passing from your feet, side to 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 side. You're not strong, you're not squeezing really hard, but that's increasing the intensity because you're moving you're increasing the tempo. You're not squeezing any harder than you did before. And then for boxing or kickboxing, you could do the same thing where you don't turn your power up at all. You just increase the volume. Your hand speed and your kick speeds, what you're throwing way faster, but also you're throwing more tempo. You throw 8-10 punches in 3 seconds, but the power didn't go up. So, if you hear me also with that, if you hear me say that your intensity needs to go up, it could mean that you do need to squeeze stronger when you get an underhook or you get a body lock pass or you get a sumigeshi grip or you get a guillotine. That could be that you need to actually isometrically squeeze better, but you could also increase intensity by just increasing the tempo of your offense again or your counters. If you're wondering, just to lay that out where I'm getting. So again, the when to sprint, when intense, you can go high intensity when the chance of injury is lower. When the chance of injury is higher, you want to go more technical. Okay, so examples for jiu-jitsu. This would be for jiu-jitsu, it would be takedowns and submissions. So when you're in the gym and when you're sparring, when you're doing live takedowns, sparring live takedowns, and when you're doing submissions, that's when you're actually applying a submission, you're finishing a submission. That's when you want to maximize how technical you are and you want to control your intensity. Okay. This is really, really simple. I don't want to sprint while I'm doing takedowns. The chance for injury from myself, I can injure myself very well because if I make an error and I twist my ankle or twist my knee or I fall on my face, that's going to hurt. But when I'm doing a throw on somebody, I don't want to slam my partner on their head. I don't want to break their neck. I don't want to damage their spine. If I'm going for a move, I'm not trying to jump on their ankle or jump on their knee. There's always going to be accidents, so you can't eliminate all the accidents. But with smart training protocols, you can avoid the majority of all the things that are avoidable. You can actually avoid. There are always going to be random accidents. But during takedowns, that's when you can blow a knee out. You can tear an ACL. You can break a shin, like Anderson Silva style. You can dislocate an ankle, roll through. A submission, that's when you can break an arm. That's when you can break a leg. That's when you can tear an ACL. So in those times, that's not the time to sprint. Takedowns, doing live takedowns is not the time to sprint. That's to go 90% intensity. That's not the time to do it. It's not even the smartest strategy either. This is not what pro fighters do. It's no one goes high intensity on, even in full fights, they don't go high intensity on the takedown or submission. So or I say high intensity, they don't go max intensity. Okay. If you go max intensity while you're going for a takedown or a submission, it's either going to work or it's not going to work, okay? The problem is, lots of times, if you're trying to do a heel hook or an arm bar and you go max, the higher your intensity is, the lower your technical ability. They have an inverse relationship. There's a give and a take. And the higher your intensity goes, your technique will depreciate. So you can go at whatever intensity that your technique doesn't fall apart. Tim Kennedy had a post about we had a school shooter in Nashville, and he commented on it. The Metro Police they handled it. The way that they handled it was great. It was amazing, especially compared to Uvalde. That shooting was terrible. So they were saying Nashville like set the standard. And on Tim Kennedy's post, he posted the body cam footage from the Metro officers, and he said that he was speaking of their speed. But then he said speed is a misnomer because you go at a speed that your skill doesn't depreciate. If you run in so fast that you can't see what's in the room and then you just get shot, well, now you're another victim that other people are having to help. So the saying like smooth is fast, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. That's it. Like you watch Israel Adesanya, you watch Gordon Ryan. It's like those are the two of the best striker. That's the best striker and best grappler right now. Both of them are smooth. Their speed and precision comes from how smooth they are. Gordon with grappling. Grappling is obviously a slower sport than striking, but still, Israel Adesanya is super, super smooth. It makes you more efficient. And that is ultimately what you need if you're trying to take out somebody tough. If you have somebody who is willing to, they won't tap if their ankle gets popped or their knee gets popped once. You need to be able to break that thing. Like, you need to be able to separate it. You need to be able to get it so that they can't walk on anymore so you can continue the fight. If you have somebody who's tough enough that you can hit them and you hit them on the top of the head and they're almost unconscious, but they just look at you and laugh because they like to get hit in the head, you need to be technical enough so that your precision can land right on their chin. So it doesn't matter how crazy they are, how motivated they are, how much drugs they're on. You hit them on the chin, you hit them at the correct spot, you hit them hard enough so that their brain collides into their skull, on the inside of their skull. That then causes the concussion, turns off the brain. It's a protection mechanism. That's what you need to do. If you're doing a heel hook, you need to be able to tear the knee. You need to be able to tear the ACL, MCL, LCL so bad that when they try to stand up, they try to continue fighting, or you create the spiral fracture that Craig Jones did against Biggie Magalhaes, where he can't stand up. The fight's over because he can't use his leg anymore. Or your choke needs to be accurate enough that a rear naked choke, that it is on the throat. And again, it doesn't matter how much crack they're on, meth they're on, how motivated, how crazy they are. You stop the blood flow to their brain and they are rendered unconscious. Doesn't matter. So this would be like, yeah, of course, you can get a face lock finish. You can get that on a lot of people that are reasonable and have a normal job. But the guy who's okay with his face getting smashed and he's okay, he's like, okay, break my nose, I don't care. Like, I'm going to lick the blood off my face. Or jawline, okay, pull. I don't care if my jaw pops. I'm going to laugh. I don't care. There are a lot of people like that, especially in a fight or in a high-level competition when adrenaline's bumping. You need to be able to put them away. So that's the reason why you don't just go high intensity at a pro level, world championship level in combat sports. You got to be able to put the person away. And if your intensity is too high, it drops your technique, your accuracy, and that person... that type of person, I notice this a lot of times where there are athletes, students that I have that are very physical, they're very strong, and that's key to their success. They will oftentimes go against people that are like not close to as technical as them, but I watch it but the person is very strong, like they're very physical. Like we could say I got a good blue belt that is very athletic, very strong, very fast, everything, very technical too. But if he rolls with like a college football player, he will make the match a harder match than it needs to be, because he will try to use intensity. He will try to out-intensity the college football player. When the college football player is a white belt that doesn't know what he's doing, intensity is all he has. Strength and power is all he has. So when I see it on the outside, again, it's always easier when you're the outsider looking in. I have holes as well. I'm not perfect or anything, but I'm just calling these out as a reminder where so anyway, went on a little tangent there, rant. And for your training partners and just as good training, again, you want to hang out in that close to middle or center left or center right for any given day training session, because especially if you're doing multiple training sessions in a day, you shouldn't just redline it. And if you're trying to actually, skill acquisition should be the goal, is building skill over time. I promise we're going to get to when you should sprint, when you should go high intensity. Just laying out the couple of things first. It's for striking examples, okay? So when you don't want to sprint during sparring, one of the best little slogans my boxing coach told me, he's like, it's great, is we develop our power on the heavy bag. You don't develop your power on your training partners, okay? If you're doing that, if you're developing your power on your training partners, it's because you're not a good training partner, okay? You don't care if somebody else has to miss the next day of practice. Again, this doesn't mean going soft or super soft or anything. But you shouldn't be trying to give your training partners concussions in the gym. You are, of course, punching them, but you shouldn't be trying to knock them out in practice. If you land a good shot and you notice that you rock your partner, your sparring partner, you let them recover in practice, because you need to. If you go, we were talking about this last Thursday, if you went fight pace, you did fight pace, like, hey, we're going to go hard. We're going to go super, super hard. So what we'll do is we'll take shin guards off, take mouthpiece off, we'll do MMA gloves, and let's go, yeah, five-minute rounds. Everybody would do 3 to maybe 5 five-minute rounds if they were going full intensity, and they would have to take the next week off. The only person that wouldn't would just be if there was one person who was better than everybody else. And again, that just means that you're not in a good gym. If you're the only if nobody can touch you, like, that's not the mark of a good gym. A good gym, the coach is going to get tapped, going to get caught with stuff. He's going to get challenged all the time. And that the only time that doesn't happen is every once in a while. I mean, I've seen this in person, but when the coach gets like a cult-like personality thing, and there's always going to be a leadership role where students are going to look up to the coach. But as a coach, you need to be responsible and you need to understand that. You need to not take advantage of people. Don't try to pull money out of them. Don't try to gaslight them or manipulate them and stuff. You need to be responsible with that, because people do look up to coaching staff. So you need to be as honest, and you need to stay humble and not try to let it get to your head. But I've seen it before with coaches that, if you tapped them or you took them down, or, you know, you catch them with a combination, when you're sparring with them, then they would treat you really, really bad. They'd be really rude to you, and they would just try to turn you into an outcast. So then what happens is that guy, that coach just, starts living in an echo chamber. 'Cause what happens, everybody goes with them and they just go easy. They go easy. They don't give him a good round. And then when he actually finally gets challenged, or he competes, or he goes against somebody at another gym, or somebody that, you know, isn't one of his students, then he just gets torn apart and he's so confused by it. I have seen that in person. This exact scenario I'm talking about, I've seen happen. I've actually seen it happen multiple times, but I have one really good example. And it can happen pretty easy. So you're being a bad training partner. You're giving your training partner, you're knocking each other out. You're giving concussions. It's not good for people's long-term health. It's not smart. You can definitely do boxing and kickboxing. You can fight amateur. You can fight professional. You can do it in a way where you don't have to. It's not guaranteed that you're going to have brain damage, big issues. Now, you could do it old school way, and we're going to go over that. And that is going to just about guarantee that you're going to have it, unless you're one of those genetic outliers that you're naturally resistant to CTE, which you can actually get a genetic test done for that to see whether you're naturally resistant or if you're naturally susceptible to it. If you want to be a pro MMA fighter, I would definitely research and get that genetic testing done. Because if you want to be a pro MMA fighter or kickboxer, if you did that test, it would let you know if you're at risk for it. You know, if you're at risk for it, maybe just focus on grappling instead. Just the same way that somebody that might be naturally at risk for diabetes, because it's in their family, be smarter to make adjustments early in their life, to mitigate the natural genetic predisposition to the diabetes. The exact same thing is going to go with your striking. Oh, sorry. The reason why, the problem with that high intensity, you're like, well, you get really tough. If we just did 3 5-minute rounds or 5 5-minute rounds, we were fighting every single week, that would be awesome, right? It's like, no, just crank the numbers, do the math on that. 52 weeks a year, you spar one time a week. Let's say you spar one time a week, 52 weeks a year. Let's say you're getting, let me make sure that, if my podcast is still working. Sorry, if you can still hear me here. Sorry, I'm just trying to make sure that the podcast. Okay. I was going to pull a calculator out, to do it, but I'll just, anyway, you can do the math, but it's really easy. 52 weeks a year, and you do 5 rounds or 52 weeks a year, 52 sessions times 5. The amount of sparring sessions that you get in a year versus the person who dials back the intensity and they focus on technique. They let their training partners recover. If they get rocked, they don't finish them. They limit the use of, like, not full power head kicks or full power spinning back kicks or full power side kicks, where you, the spinning back kick, the spinning back fist and the full power head kick, all those are good ones to knock people out. So you got to control your power when you do those. And the side kick to the body, or a turning side kick to the body as well. It's not a knockout shot, but you can break the ribs pretty easy with that one. So if you focus on technique with those versus intensity, instead of those, 300 rounds that you get throughout a year, instead you could get, 15 rounds every week. So it's like you get 15 rounds instead of five. It's like, yeah, you get triple the amount of work in a year. And now you just multiply that out into 2, 3, 5 years when you should be pretty good. There's going to be a huge difference between those numbers when you crunch the numbers. If you want to see this, another example, this would be the book Talent is Overrated. It's a really good book. I would highly suggest everybody read that if you're interested in high achievement. But Talent is Overrated. They actually did a study in the book, and it was studying classical musicians. I think it's over 15 years of their time. But yeah, they measured somehow. I don't know how they did this, or if it's just part of a school program, but a classical, maybe classical guitar, if I remember. But they record their training sessions, the amount of deliberate practice they do from all in the same time, same age, and then they divided them into the high achievers, medium level, and the low achievers, and it all directly correlated to the amount of deliberate practice. It's also a good book where if somebody just thinks that somebody's just naturally amazing, like John Jones wasn't naturally amazing. John Jones was a national champion, wrestler. And when he was young, his dad was taking him. Not only was he wrestling during the season, but his dad was taking him. He was doing wrestling camps. He was wrestling all year round. It's still amazing that he is the youngest UFC champion, but it wasn't by accident. It wasn't. Yeah, not at all. Just cranking the numbers. Now the old school, what we used to do old school. And I say we, like I didn't come up with it. It's when I came in, it's what I inherited or I came into and I didn't know any better. But old school, it was basically, pretty low compared to nowadays. The technique was extremely low. You know, my first instructor that was a purple belt, when I first started, all three of the instructors were purple belts. And my blue belts would, not only would they beat them in a match, but just explaining jiu-jitsu, they would dominate them in explaining, like, tactics, strategy, like how to, they still were pretty good at tactics and strategy, but actually, like, solving a problem. Hey, how do I deal with this? Hey, how do I deal with this? How in a counter? My blue belts are so much more technical than the purple belts and brown belts that I trained under when I first started. But that's just nature. That's just how life goes. Education and information keeps upgrading, or that's what it's supposed to do. But yeah, the skill level was really low. They just didn't know a lot of things in that time period. Since when I started, a whole lot of stuff was invented, invented or discovered. It just wasn't known, and we didn't have the internet, so it wasn't distributed to everybody. So everybody was in their little camps trying to just figure it out, and then they would put out like a UFC All Access or something, and then everybody would go to copy that. I remember Sean Shirk, he put out a strength conditioning program, and then every gym copied it. They all bought sledgehammers, and every gym across the country was hitting tires with sledgehammers and flipping tires and doing sprints. And and we didn't really know what we were doing. We just thought it was cool, and we were like, yeah, that's awesome. The other thing, too, is there was way more drug use in MMA. The jiu-jitsu drug use, honestly, is probably exactly the same, but MMA, there was way more drug use. So they could afford to go with higher intensity because the recovery is so much better when they're just on performance-enhancing drugs. But that even hurt them in a way. Actually, it hurt them in a lot of ways because they just would just focus on what their natural, like that, what they thought, what a Rocky movie told them to do, which was intensity. A lot of our takedowns and our wrestling, I mean, everything was so much less developed because the intensity was too high. I remember for MMA rounds, all the time they would just say I don't know why people, it's a default setting, because I've seen students that today have never been through that program, and they just train for 2 years. And then when they say, it's like, hey, we're doing MMA rounds, they just, by default, for some reason, everybody thinks MMA rounds are, we start up with an over-under up against the wall, and we throw punches and knees on the walls. That's wall wrestling or fence wrestling, but that's not MMA rounds. That's what we used to do all the time. But the thing is, our coaches didn't even give like detailed explanations. You know, like we never worked a way through the position. It was really just like, hey, get an over under chest to chest up against the wall, and then, you know, and go at it. Now, we weren't throwing knees full power or punches full power. But the takedowns we're going for was, super high intensity. So we weren't developing new moves. Like the stuff that Donaher's doing, Craig Jones is doing, Gordon beat all the B team, the all how they actually work things out. It's so refreshing to see because, and this is Demetrius Johnson. Now, you know, there were the people that stepped out, like Demetrius Johnson, his coach, they were doing this. And it's like, that's the reason why they became champions, and they stepped out. But again, you just didn't have the footage and stuff. People didn't know about it, but yeah, we would just basically like two rams, just ramming our heads into each other, just repeating the exact same thing over and over and over, instead of actually trying to figure out, problem solving. Like, hey, when my opponent gets this, like, how do I get through this? Like, what's a mechanic? And the problem is the coaches, lots of times, they didn't want to admit they didn't know. If you don't know, it's okay. It's not the end of the world. You just don't know. It's like, okay, I'm not sure on that. Let's play with it. Let's figure it out. That's what a coach's job is. A coach isn't just somebody that just knows everything. If you think you know everything, that's how I know that you are an idiot. Are you just extremely narcissistic or egomaniac? But my coach is like, yeah, just we're not working through mechanics. We just repeat the same things that were taught to them, just the same information repeated, not updated, not worked on it. And then the answer was up the intensity. The answer was people are having a hard time. We lost these fights. Well, at the end of practice, whether it was kickboxing, boxing, jiu-jitsu, whatever, MMA, whatever practice it was, okay, we're doing sprints now because you got tired in the fight, or you couldn't land the take. You got tired doing takedowns. Well, no, the answer is not do sprints and at the end. No, the answer is come up with better strategies and a better mechanic so that you can complete the takedown, so that you're not just banging your head against the wall, wasting energy. That is one thing that I've noticed that in the last few years has really updated. But yeah, the old school, it was, again, just didn't know any better. But also wasn't really working to, at least my experience, there was not a lot of people, experimenting. They were experimenting, but, not like they are now. The problems with the old school, lots of injuries. You're not becoming more technical. You could hit a plateau and just stick in that plateau because you just keep on doing the exact same things week after week after week. So it's like, what are you doing? You're just repeating the same thing. You're not becoming more technical. You're not actually learning how to solve a problem. You're trying to force through it. You're not innovating anything. You're creating bad habits because if you don't learn how to solve the problem and you're using the incorrect response, and then your thought is, hey, I'll just need to just do it harder or faster. The more you do that, the more you carve that neural pathway, and the more it becomes a habit, and you keep on doing it more and more. And you can break bad habits, of course. It just, you know, you're just building a bad habit, and that's what you're going to do under stress or when you get really tired. High levels of stress, you go to what your level of training is, your auto. And you waste a ton of energy. You waste a ton of energy just in your life because you're doing it day after day, week after week. But you waste a ton of energy in the actual fight, wrestling match, jiu-jitsu match. Because by definition, if you're not doing it the most technical or efficient way, you are energy is just sapping out of you. You're just wasting energy. And you are always going to have to use energy and force. We just want to make sure that it's applied using the correct mechanic accurately at the right time. That's what we're looking for. And then if you have those things and you know where to place the shot, or again, you know where to apply the technique, you know how to apply the technique, you know when to apply the technique, then yes, the intensity needs to come in behind that, the strength, the power, the explosiveness, the volume of offense. So yeah, when do you go hard? All right, so going off more about the old school stuff, but the new students won't know how it used to be. But also new students, if they don't know how it used to be, they might even not believe me when I'm given a more technical approach, what to do. Because also the human nature thing, go hard is the autopilot. The go hard is what, it's the reason why they make the Rocky movies the way they did. It's the reason why they're creating slap box, that Dana White's doing the slap box. They're doing that to appeal to the uneducated, to the average person that is ignorant to the sport, that's uneducated. Because if you want to make money off somebody, if you want to make some money off somebody, you want to manipulate somebody, you don't correct them when they're wrong. You don't educate them. You don't let them know. That's not how you make money. That's not how you manipulate somebody. If you want to make money off somebody, you want to manipulate somebody, you pat them on the back and you make them feel good for whatever their natural disposition or assertion or theory is. You pat them on the back and you tell them, yep, you're right. You're right. Look, you're so right. Buy this slap box for $9.99 or, you know, whatever it is. And then you get their money. They will gladly give you the money because you are complimenting their taste. You're complimenting their intellect. You're complimenting the way that they see the world. And you're not educating them. You're not. Again, it's just an echo chamber. So, again, in the natural reaction, again, we are animals. And I'm gonna tell you right now, with no training, the person has no experience, you have no experience, probably, I can totally understand the smartest thing to do. Neither one of you, there's no rock around, there's no knife, there's nothing. It's just you and them. Get on top of them and punch them in the head as hard as you can, as fast as you can. Yes, but the second that there's technology involved, whether it's knives, weapons, vehicles, tactics, strategy, techniques, all these things, then you need to integrate those exact same things. If not, you're trying to jump on them and just hammer fist them in the face just fast as you can. And they have a helmet on. And it's like, this is, why would you get on top of them and punch them? They're wearing a helmet. When should you go hard? You should go hard. Again, assuming that you're an athlete and you're pushing yourself, you should go hard every week. I highly encourage it. It's good for your body. You're going to need it to get ready for competition, for tournaments and fights. And mentally, it's also a way to get yourself mentally stronger and tougher. You need you get tougher through stressful, pushing yourself past your limit. Hey, princess. I'm almost done, okay? Yes, 1 second. Okay, I'm almost done. Will you sit right here? I'm almost done.
What's her name?
It's nobody. It's a podcast. I'm doing podcasts. Okay, here, sit right here. Sit right here. I'm almost done. You can listen. So when should you go hard? Yes, here, 1 second. Okay, shh, be quiet. Real quick, I'm almost done. So when should you go hard? There are specific times that you need to go hard. Again, follow the lower chance for injury is when you want your intensity to go higher. So for examples, I can give you, if you come on Thursdays, the power drill that we do for sparring, if you're not part of our gym or our team, like you'll have to join the gym or join the team to know what that is. It's not complicated, but it's focused on developing explosive power. So that we can score more knockouts as a team, or so that we can score more TKOs. But it's not even that complicated. It's pretty simple. But the striking, the power drills that we do, that's a time that you want to go hard. Like if you come in on a Thursday, you're going to hear me almost every Thursday say, hey, if you can make yourself vomit right now, I'm so proud of you. If you can make yourself vomit right now, I'm very proud of you. If you can make yourself pass out on your feet, I'm very proud of yourself, or proud of you. And if you're a good athlete, it's going to be pretty hard to do that. When you're really well conditioned, it's hard to push yourself to vomiting unless you naturally just vomit easier than most people. And to make yourself pass out, it's really, really hard. I've tried to train multiple times to make myself pass out. I've gotten pretty close a couple times, but again, this is assuming that you're a good athlete. It is really tough to do. Dan Gable said he his goal was to always push, it was to push himself so hard that he couldn't walk off the mats, that he'd have to be carried. And he said, unfortunately, I never accomplished that goal. I love that quote. But yeah, think of that. That's the energy when we're doing our power drills on Thursdays. Your strength training is when you want to go high intensity. Okay. So the reason why I say the go high intensity, it depends on what strength training you're doing. You know, if you're doing some box jumps or like plyometrics, something where you could roll your ankle, you got to be smart with it. But if you're doing squats and you know how to do a squat, you know proper form, then yes, you're going high intensity. You're not, you are trying to increase the amount of, you know, power and output that your legs can do. That's going to make you stronger, more explosive. You can kick harder. You can squeeze stronger with your legs for triangle chokes, etc. You need to go hard on your strength training. So you need to go high intensity on your strength training. You need to push yourself. I'm not telling you to max out every single day. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying when you're doing a squat, you're not catching a ball or throwing a ball. Or when you're doing a squat, you're not also pummeling your legs for a leg lock. You're not slipping a punch. So you still have to be technical to make sure that you do a squat properly. But you so that you're doing a squat properly. But it's not as technical as, you know, setting up a leg lock entry or setting up a question mark kick. So your intensity should go higher, but your technique doesn't go completely out of the window so that you injure yourself. But yeah, your intensity should go higher when you're doing your strength training. And also I was going to say, if you feel like your punching power, your kicking power, or your power for submissions, if you feel like you're, if you know how to do a heel hook or an arm bar and you feel like you can't break your opponent's knee, you can't tear their ACL, or you can't break their arm at the elbow with the arm bar, if you feel like you're not strong enough to do that, don't do it on your training partner. Don't try to get stronger on their elbow or their knee. Don't be ripping that as your strength training program. You need to go to the gym. You need to do deadlifts. You need to do squats. You need to do bent over rows. You need to push yourself with your lifting program to get strong enough. Because if you know the correct mechanics, heel hooks work really well. Arm bars work really well. A head kick, they're really strong. They're very effective. So you don't develop your power in your training partners. You develop that power in the gym, lifting with your strength program. And if you're not doing a strength program, that's one thing I'll say, that because MMA's gone on this too with old school stuff. Some places it was nothing but strength program, some none at all. And I hear athletes still now, some of them say that they don't. Yeah, you do not want to have zero strength program. The mistake I notice is lots of people will do no strength and conditioning because they cut weight. You still need to be doing strength training to maintain the muscle you have. The quality of muscle, as much strength as possible, even when you're cutting weight, you still need to be working on your strength program. It's also going to lower your chance for injury. But again, it makes you actually stronger at doing stuff over time. So high intensity during your strength training, high intensity during your conditioning, your cardio training. Okay. So high intensity, again, it could be speed. It could be that you're doing hill sprints. Hill sprints are better than, definitely not decline sprints. That's going to be when you would want to run more technical because you're running down a decline and you could get injured. Here, one second. I'm almost done. So come here. So you don't want to go high intensity when you're going on a decline. You don't want to do high intensity when you're going on a decline. That's when you could get injured. But you can go high intensity when you're going on an incline because you're running up a hill. And because you're running uphill, you're not going to run as fast as you would. No, no, no. Don't jump. No, no. Get down. Slow. Don't jump. Don't jump. Come on. But yeah, you don't want, when you're running up a hill, if it's a very steep hill, you can go 100% exertion and you'll barely be moving up that hill because it is so steep. My old neighbor, it used to be like that. You could full speed up that bad boy and you're barely moving because it's so steep. But that's a way that you're going high intensity and the chance for injury is very low because you're probably not going to fall down and you're putting out a ton of work rate because that hill is so steep. And you're not actually going that fast. Again, with the power drills that we do, stop, give it to me, stop. The power drills we do, we're not hitting each other in the head so that we're not getting concussions. your conditioning. You could also do high intensity. When I was saying earlier that you could up the volume and not necessarily the power, you could do a high intensity. If you want to run, look, you want to do something impressive, you do crazy hill sprints, or you go run and you get your David Goggins on and you get to where you go run 20 miles at a time like that. Yeah, that's pretty hardcore in your conditioning. And that is going to increase your VO2 max and make your heart better, your cardio better. That's a smart thing to do. Not exploding on a guillotine choke. Just ripping on a guillotine choke that you halfway have locked correctly. Let's see. When it comes to like mental toughness for sport, not stopping when you get tired. So not taking a round off. Now, obviously, if it's a, you know, how we run the gym is for a standard class, we alternate weight classes. And, you know, I'm not telling you to be rude and just be a mat hog and not let other people roll. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, if there's opportunities for you to roll, yes, I see you. If there's opportunities for you to roll, then going, or what's most important, honestly, is when there is an opportunity to roll and you are just dog tired, you can hardly move, and you know that if you roll this round, you're going to lose. And so that you decide, then you decide to sit out. Like, you're like, hey, I'm out, because in my head, I know, okay, I look over, oh man, it's Jackson. Jackson needs a partner. Man, if I go with Jackson, I'm getting smoked right now. Oh, okay, so I'm just going to sit out. And then Jackson's got to sit out too. Jackson's got to sit out too, because just nobody's going. You know, because just nobody's going. But the reason why is my mental toughness can't handle me just getting smashed right now. So I'm going to sit out and I'm going to wait. I'm going to watch him do another three rounds. And after I sit and wait three rounds, then I'm going to hop in and go with him. I'm going to go really, really hard for 3 or 4 minutes. And then I'm going to be toasted and then I'm going to sit out another three rounds. That's not a smart way to train. It's also not making you mentally tough. If you want to get yourself mentally tough, when you feel like, oh man, I really don't want to roll with this guy right now. And it's not because he's a bad training partner, he's got a bad attitude, or he's like a high chance for injury. It's because he's so good that that this is about to suck because I'm so tired, I'm in a bad spot. Every time you do that, you avoid the discomfort of getting smushed that time, but you're making yourself mentally weaker over and over. You keep telling yourself that when I'm at this state, this is, I avoid it. But the opposite, if you do that more and more, you're going high mental intensity on that. You will over time get to the point where you almost have like a fearless demeanor where it's like, I don't even care if this guy's better than me. He's not about to get the satisfaction of me backing down to him and not giving him a match. So yeah, that's a toughness that I respect as well. One of our young students, Abdul Aziz, was telling me about the last tournament. He said that if he gets caught in an armbar, he wasn't going to tap. And I was like, Abdul Aziz, that is not a toughness that I'm proud of. That's not a toughness. So then because he had told me that, I was like, I'll show you the toughness I'm proud of. That is like, that's respectable. And when he was rolling, every time he would try to get to a point where he wanted to coast and he wanted to maybe stall or coast a little bit and stop being offensive, I would stay on him and I would give him coaching and tell him what to do, but I'd stay on him. And after, he was super, super tired. And I was like, dude, it's easy to just bite down your mouthpiece and let somebody pull on an armbar. That doesn't take, you know, that's a really simplified version of toughness. But it's way more tough to get to the point where you want to quit because you're so tired, and then to keep on staying mentally and physically aggressive with the volume of offense. The hardest one to do for the intensity is or like toughness and intense, if you want to go intense, is going to be your consistency. Training day after day, year after year. Day after day, year after year. That's the hardest. That takes the most intensity, because that means every single day that you wake up, what you did yesterday, congratulations, it's a new day, you got to start all over again. And that's not just going to the gym, it's not just coming for Muay Thai or boxing or MMA or wrestling or jiu-jitsu, it's not combat sports, and it's not just lifting, it's not just strength conditioning. It's your diet too. It's your strength, your conditioning. It's your skill, your sport that you're practicing, your skill development. It's, again, your everything from all the stuff you put in your body, your sleep, everything. That is the thing. If you want to go high intensity on something, like bump your intensity up on your consistency. And that, again, that doesn't mean that you got to be at Phoenix MMA 6-7 days a week. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you could go to Phoenix MMA three days a week, and then you're lifting 3 days a week, and you could just do a kettlebell at home. That's fine. And then you're saying you stay consistent on that program for years, and you are going to be pretty good. You're going to be pretty tough, and you are going to get good. I guess the last, I just have a little notes. Yeah, like, you know, punching a wall is not impressive. You know, letting somebody just crank on your elbow, that's not an impressive thing. What's impressive, like solving just difficult problems, like the high intensity on, oh, sorry, that's the part I left out. The last one I had was study hard. So if you want to go high intensity, you're high intensity on studying, and that's a combination of instructionals, but also fights as well. Okay, and guess what? It's really hard. It's not easy to do that. It is hard to keep an attention span and watch an instructional. It's hard to have an attention span and pull out a fight. Instead of pulling out a beer, you pull out a notebook, and when you watch the fight, you don't watch the fight like a normal person. You watch the fight. And every time somebody scores a technique, you rewind it multiple times, and then you watch it over and over and over, and you see what was the setup, what was the actual entry, what was the finish, over and over and over until you actually understand what's going on. There's plenty of, if you want to go hard, there's plenty to go around. There's so much to go around that you will be thankful for when you go to, if you do it the right way, you'll be thankful that you don't have to go at max intensity at every single practice for jiu-jitsu or Muay Thai or MMA. You'll be thankful that during the MMA rounds, we're only throwing 20-30% power for the punches and the elbows and knees. Because that's going to be a part of your day, but another part of your day is going to be your strength conditioning program that you're doing, that you're putting a lot of effort into, and also the same thing with your diet, and then you still have to have your family life and also work as well. So you're going to be better for it. But so anyway, so. High max intensity, or very, very close to max intensity. Quick summary: do it during your studying, your mental, your studying tape. Do it on your conditioning, your cardio, and your strength training. When you have a takedown and you could potentially slam somebody in their head and break their neck or knock them out, you should be focused on technique. When you have a heel hook on somebody that could tear their ACL, or you have an arm bar that could break their arm, you should be focusing on technique. You should not be going high intensity. And again, if you got some frustration and you want a heavy bag to hit on, then get a heavy bag and put that in your backyard, or you put it in your garage and you go hit on that heavy bag when you're mad. But you don't come to the gym with your training partners and try to take your day out on them. That's just being a bad teammate. That's being a bad training partner. Again, the counter to that, I'm not saying to be super soft. I'm saying you can, all of this can be done. It's not in a soft way, but, there's a line to where, you're going to cause injuries. And then the last thing I'll put it with is, the Donaher has an instructional on, BJJ Fanatics that works good for all combat sports. But I like that he mentions there's the Pareto distribution, which is, you know, roughly the 80-20 rule. 20% of techniques, or 20% of something, is responsible for 80% of the outcome. But it's, people think of it all the time for like a life hack for, you know, 20% of the techniques win 80% of the fights. That's true. But also it happens to the negative things as well. 20% of the techniques cause 80% of the injuries. So that's why if you hear me being specific on certain training protocols, you know, watching your neighbors, don't crash into each other. So, you know, control your space, hit the, you know, move to clear space if you need to, or, you know, all the no jumping takedowns, things like this. It's for that. So yeah, those are the reasons for the training protocols. Again, roughly 20% of the techniques account for the 80% or vast majority of the injuries. And then the other negative thing too, with bad training partners that are acting this way, I'm putting it out, it sucks, but because I just want it, not have them. But it is the Pareto distribution stands solid with this too, and it, Donner has it, brings it up, where 20% of your students will be the cause of 80% of your injuries, or 20% of your students will be the cause of 80% of your headaches and problems in the gym. So, yeah, let's try not to be that 20%. We're going to try to get as low as possible. But I hope you enjoyed this podcast episode, and I'll see everybody tomorrow. So see you.